Well, this is about peace and unity, but there's a lot of war goes on, and I want you to help me out here for a minute. Let's see how many conflicts are going on in the world, either wars or conflicts, that are taking place in the world right now. See how many of them we can name. Go ahead. Syria. Somebody else? Ukraine. ISIS, that's going on in a couple countries, right? Israel and Hamas. North Korea and South Korea still going and exchanging shots at times. Ferguson, yeah. Right, Israel. What else? What's that? Libya. Somebody in the first service who happened to have a green shirt on said, Green Bay Packers and the Bears. At least he was admitting it was a conflict, right? China and Japan over some islands, right? There's a number of different things going on in South America, some in Central America. There's wars and there's conflicts and there's issues all over the place. And here's the deal. Why is that? Why do we see this? Have you thought much about the irony of the idea of when these conflicts come up? You know who goes in to help? It's the United Nations. United Nations, right? Who's standing in between them, trying to keep them at peace. It's not getting much united going on. And you know what they're called when they go in there? Peacekeeping troops. Yeah, and they have a lot of big guns. So they're United Nations, and they're peacekeeping troops with a lot of guns, and they're having to station between these two warring nations and stuff. It's not a lot of uniting, and it's not a lot of peace. So what is going on? Why? Either there is no resolution, because we don't see this just occasionally. This has been all along, all our lives, all of humanity. We've been able to describe and say there are lots of wars that are going on. A lot of smart and very well-intentioned, very talented, and very committed people have really tried to help resolve a number of these, and it hasn't worked. Is there no peace? Is there no ability to be united? Is it not really ever going to take place? And we don't have to look just at a global scale. I received an email recently from a desperate wife and mother expressing her anguish. Here's what she wrote. Why is he so mean to me when he's commanded to love me? And why am I so cruel back to him when he hurts me with his words, seemingly unable to just see that at that moment, he's just a hurting man? Where is our victory? It isn't just out there. There's these divisions everywhere. Divisions between nations, divisions between tribes, divisions between husband and wife, divisions between Republicans and Democrats, divisions between parents and kids, divisions between gay and straight, conservative and liberal, and we could go on and on and on. It's everywhere. Is there no opportunity of peace? Is there no opportunity of unity? Now, it's additionally difficult when we try to address this in our day because of the way that we have, in our general construct, decided that we are supposed to talk about things. And the additional problem then in addressing the issue is the way we go about dialogue today. Many people have chosen to make the absolute the victim. In other words, whatever is good for the victim, that's what we're going to support. That's what the whole idea and the nature of politically correct speech is about, is protecting someone who either feels hurt or insulted or put down. We can't do that. We can't go there. We can't have that kind of talk going on. Well, that puts truth off of the table because it's only what's going to hurt or potentially harm this person as the ultimate measure. It's interesting, this way of thinking of trying to be inclusive is not new. We hear about it a bit more, but let me remind you of a song that you've no doubt heard. It's called Imagine. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do.
nothing to kill or die for, and no religion, too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one, that is unity. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. I honestly have a hard time with that. Just no possessions. Where did they go? Okay, no need for greed or hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. Do you know when John Lennon wrote that? 1971. 40-some years ago, and a lot of people have bought in. How well is that working for us? How well is that working for us on the world scene? How well is that philosophy, that idea of just, let's just put away our differences, let's don't make these absolute claims, let's not do these things, and how well does that work for us? It isn't working very well. Piper says this, the new authority today says that if an idea can be made to sound tolerant or respectful of differences or pluralistic or compassionate, then the idea is good to endorse. Notice I didn't say that the idea is true, but truth is emphatically not a politically correct concept. The claim to truth is arrogant and intolerant and disrespectful of differences and undemocratic and uncompassionate. And so how do we have this dialogue? Now, please understand that what I'm not advocating is that we just then make that as an excuse to fight. I am not saying that at all. But if we can't have the dialogue without wondering if because one person gets offended, then how can we ever have the talk? Because somebody's going to be offended at anything that anyone says. We cannot end up having the discussion then. And so in order to have unity, we have to have a unifying principle. And a unifying principle, by definition, really, then, is truth. Something has to be ultimately true, or else we don't have any unity. We don't have any real concept to go from there. So God says that there is only one source of unity, and here's where it comes from. Death. You want unity? Die. And you go, okay, great, Gary, thanks. That's helpful, but you know, I'm not sure what I do with that. Well, we're going to look at that, and we're going to express that, because I want you to notice now as we dive into the text, look at what Paul is saying here. Look at with me at verse 11. He describes this great divide. Please understand, this really is a great divide. It might not be in your mind, and it might not be in your experience, but this is huge when he says, there are those, you, he's writing primarily to the Gentiles, you who are Gentiles, you are called the uncircumcision by those who call themselves the circumcision. Now, we just read that and we know that's the Jews and the Gentiles, but it's way bigger than that. Picture the worst Hatfield and McCoy's fight you've ever heard of. Picture the people who get along the least. Picture that and multiply it by about 50-fold. That's how divided this is. The Jews took their position as God's chosen people, and they became so arrogant about that choice of God that they alienated themselves from the Gentiles, and the Gentiles ended up warring against them generation after generation after generation, and it was deep-seated, it was thick, the wall was huge. Notice what verse 12 says. You are separate from Christ, excluded from the citizenship of Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. Here's where another person described that idea of the state of the Gentiles, okay, to make the separation. Here's what he said. This is like a mariner who is without a compass and without a guide, adrift in a rudderless ship during a starless night on a stormy sea far from any harbor. That's a bad night. That doesn't work. And that's what he's describing the Gentiles as, where their state was at. But then I want you to jump from verse 12 down with me to verse 19. And look at verse 19 with me. Consequently, so we're going to have to look and see what that word, why that word is there. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household. Whoa, there's this huge animosity, this great wall that has been built. And then suddenly when we, at verse 12, when we get to verse 19, all of a sudden we are now somehow put together, no longer foreigners, not strangers anymore. We're a fellow citizenship in God's people. We're all members of one household. We get to live in one house together. How is this? How can that take place? Big consequences. So what caused the change? Two things. Blood and death. What caused the change from verse 12 to verse 19? Blood and death. Look at how Paul tells us that. Notice verse 13. But now, so this is where you were, verse 12. But now in Christ Jesus, you who were once far away, you have been brought near. How? Read it to me. You have been brought near. How? By the blood of Christ. That's how you were brought into the household. It was by the shed blood of Christ. With what result? Look at verse 14. For he himself is our peace. Just stop right there and think about that. Is there no peace in the world? Well, where does peace come from? See, it's even more than just a truth that we have to grab hold of. It's much more than that. Peace is a person. Jesus is our peace. And until we choose Christ, we will not have peace. Not globally and not individually. Not a lasting one. And so we find here he says, Christ, who has made the two groups one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility. So where comes the peace? It comes from the person of Christ. Peace is a person, not an idea. And as long as we keep thinking that we're going to just sort of muster it up or have a philosophy that will bring it or just say, let's just join in and decide to be unified, it's not going to happen. It will only happen in Christ. Verse 15, he goes on. His purpose in bringing this one household together, his purpose was to create in himself one new humanity. That's literally what it says. It is this one new, and we could say it, one new species. You used to be Gentiles, and you used to be Jews, but now you're neither of those. You're a whole new species. And you know what the new species is? The church. That's the new species. It's an absolutely whole new idea, a whole new person, a whole new group of people that is coming then, thus, notice, to make peace. A new humanity. That's what he's about. Look at verse 16. It goes on. And in one body, then, to reconcile both of them, Jew and Gentile, to God through the cross. How do we get peace? By the blood of Christ. How do we get unity? By the cross of Christ. It's by the cross by which he put to death their hostility. So there was this reconciliation between these two unbelievably separated groups. And they had the success of coming together, and that was happening. It wasn't theoretical. These people were worshiping together who were enemies and who were at odds. And now they are coming together in one household. That came about because of death. So if we keep looking around and we try and ask, why do we see war in the world? We find that it takes place because we are not choosing the cross. When we look around at our own relationships and we see there is war that is going on in our relationships, why is it? It's because we're not choosing the cross. We're not choosing the cross. Have you ever seen this bumper sticker? The coexist bumper sticker. It's a great idea, but it's a lot like what John Lennon was saying. And here's the idea behind that. We want to all come together. We want to live in one household. But the idea, these symbols represent absolute truth claims that are utterly singular and insular to one another. It won't work. The idea is that we're trying to have a unity and we don't have any common understanding. We don't have any common belief. We won't be able to understand and it won't work. It just doesn't come together. Now, please don't hear me that I'm saying that means we need to be intentionally mean or intolerant. That's not the point. The point is that we've been trying this for centuries upon centuries and it hasn't worked. What will we do different? It's about the cross and the unity of Christ. Accommodation, pluralism, the unity and diversity, all these tolerant positions have been touted as a means to be able to bring peace. But again, how well is that working for us? It's just not working. It was interesting to me as I was reading a commentary about this. It said that, you know, look at the war that's going on in Syria. And I thought, Syria, that's pretty new. When did he do that? And I look back at the copyright, 1979. It's going on. It's continuing. So people say then that the absolute truth claim of Christianity, that Jesus is the only way to get unity, is seen today as hate speech, as intolerant, as the idea that you can't make that absolute claim because then you're saying all these people are wrong and it gets put off the table. But here's the real hate speech. And that is telling someone that there's another solution other than Jesus. That's hate speech. Because there is no other solution than Jesus. There is no other hope for us than the cross. And we have seen it for centuries that because we don't choose Christ and we don't choose the cross, we continue to have the conflicts, both personal level and in the national and global scale. Tolerance and sacrificing truth will never produce unity. It just won't. Now, I want you to think with me the most magnificent piano player that you have ever heard. Think about her sitting at the piano and she's playing these amazingly complex pieces, and some of them memorized, and they go on for 20 or 30 minutes without a note of music in front of her, and she's playing this thing and it's unbelievably complex, fast and slow and all this kind of stuff. Is she free in doing that? She's very creative, right? This utterly just uplifting music, this just amazing thing. Is she free? She's absolutely free, isn't she, to be able to make wonderful music. Is she really free, though? Is she free to go and play volleyball a bunch? Is she free to go and join the soccer team? And is she free to go and hang out with her friends all the time? Is she free to just sit around and do all kinds of other stuff and watch a lot of TV? No way. There ain't no freedom. She's, you know what her freedom is? She's free to sit on a piano bench for hours and hours and hours on end, to singularly be devoted to one thing in order to make that beautiful picture and that beautiful music. A.W. Tozer wrote this in The Pursuit of God. Has it ever occurred to you that 100 pianos, all tuned to the same fork, are automatically tuned to each other? They are of one accord by being tuned not to each other, but to another standard to which each one must individually bow. So 100 worshipers meeting together, each one looking away to Christ, are in heart nearer to each other than they could possibly be were they to become unity conscious and turn their eyes away from God to strive for a closer fellowship. If we pursue some idea of unity, there is no such thing. What we have to do is pursue Christ. We have to look to Him and have Him be our unity. This is why we can't emphasize a particular doctrine, why we can't say that we have to have this unique position or make sure we're teaching about that. In the Christian Missionary Alliance, what we emphasize is not this doctrine or that doctrine, but the person of Christ. And it's a centered set theology, a centered set thinking that says it's all about Jesus. It's all about the gospel. It's about Him being our hope, Him being our peace. Now, again, it might be that talking about world affairs and talking about those kind of lofty things don't get there for you, because maybe right now you're in the midst of a conflict. Maybe even this morning you and your spouse had words. Maybe this week was a really rough week with a coworker. Maybe there's a conflict that's been continuing to brew on for a while, and you look at that and you say, what's going on there? Why does this keep going on in my life? I want to encourage you to look at with me again James chapter 4. It'll be up on the screen. And pay attention to what this does in describing where conflict comes from. What causes fights and quarrels among you? What causes it? Where does all this come from? Why do we keep seeing warring all the time? Not just out there, but in me, in us, in our families, in our relationships. Where does it come from? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You see, you desire, but you do not have. And so you kill. James is not saying literally that you kill your spouse, that you kill your parent, that you kill that coworker, but that you kill them in your heart. You hate them. You let that fester. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. And when you do ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. Lord, fix it so my life is better. That's not surrender to God. That is not the cross. That is like, I want God to fix me so that me is good and me is on the throne. Verse 4, you adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Do you see what we do? We have a desire. The desire is to have a great relationship with our spouse. And so what we want from that spouse is to help us to do that. But our desire doesn't get met in the way we want it to get met. So we take our desire and we make it a demand. We start nagging, or we start saying, you're not doing this and you're not that. And we point to them. We make a demand. And then when the demand isn't met, then what we do is we ratchet it up to the next level that's found in that text. And that is, we go from desire to demand. Now we begin to judge. He doesn't really care for me. She isn't really that interested in this. I'm working harder at this than she is. And we begin to judge them. And then from judging, we begin to punish. That's where the hate comes in. And we punish them and we withdraw. We will only have heated talks. We won't have reasonable conversations. That's the escalation of an idol. What's to be done? Are we without hope? Is there no way for this to be resolved? Notice that there is a vertical line and a horizontal line, a horizontal beam and a vertical beam in a cross. And notice what verse 16 says. He has come to make one body to reconcile them both to God through the cross. Through the cross. How does he do that? How does he accomplish that? Notice, by which he put to death their hostility. How did he do that? Because we chose the cross. That is, we chose to die. It isn't just that Jesus dies for us. That isn't what he's saying. What he's saying is, I die. I die to my own desires. I die to my own needs. And now, living Christ, I live to be able to say, what will be good for this other person? How can I encourage them? How can I not look for my own interests, but the interests of the other person? There's an amazing hope in that and reconciliation that comes. Not only are we then right with God, but by the horizontal part of the cross, we become right with each other. That's what the gospel promises. That's what it provides and what it gives us. It's by trusting in the shed blood of Christ who died for us. What does that look like, though? It's not just compromise. I want you to notice that Paul didn't say, okay, you Jews who are over here, what I want you to do is become more Gentile-like and go over here. He didn't say to the Gentiles who are over here, look, I want you to become more Jew-like. He said, no, that won't work. You can't do that. You have to die to both of those. You have to be a whole new humanity, a whole new species. That's what it's required. That's what it takes. A whole new person is necessary. Left to ourselves, we'll continue to pursue our own means, and it won't work. That's the world's way to do it. Okay, so I'm going to expose myself to you, and I do. I wrestle with doing this, and I hope that you, I trust that you won't abuse that. But we have what is described, and we don't hear it a lot anymore, but it's a great description about what are called those inerrant sins in us. We each have besetting sins. That's the term that used to be used. Every one of us has besetting sins. Now, some people, that's alcohol. If they get by alcohol, they're in trouble. Some people, it's anger. Some people, it's overeating. Some people, it's overshopping. Some people, everybody has something that we war with, that we struggle with in the flesh. For me, it's lust. That's the issue. And I fight with it. I struggle with it. Now, here's what I want. I want God to come in and just take it away from me. A little dabble do you. It won't do you. It won't work. If I just ask God to remove it from me, he doesn't do that. Because what I'm saying is, I still want to be able to have my own way. But no, he's saying you must die, Gary. That's the course. Because either this is in charge or this is in charge. Either I'm in charge, Gary, or this is in charge. It doesn't matter what it is. You can put whatever you want in there, and every one of us has them. And are we going to die to it? Because just asking God to fix it is about our comfort, about us being in charge. I can fight it, but it doesn't work. Just like the world says, we're going to try and make peace, but it doesn't work because we won't choose death. Unity comes by death. So we look at that and we say, what does that really look like? What's the point? The cross is not then about struggling. It is really about death, that I die to myself and I say, I want all of Christ. So I look at what's going on and I see that here we are. We have this war. Maybe it's in our relationships. We have these things going on. We're fighting and we're not figuring out why. We're at odds with the whole reality of what's taking place because we say we're Christians, but we have this stuff happening. What's necessary? It's the cross. And why would we choose that? Why would we go there? Well, Kim and I went on a hiking trip a couple weeks ago, and we went to a place where some of our Wisconsin friends who have lived there all their lives, we told them that we went there, and they were like, where's that? I've never even heard of that. And we're like, yes. We're finding these out-of-the-way places. And so we went to the Pike Lake unit of the Kettle Moraine Forest. I don't know if you've been there, but we went there. We didn't know that much about it. We weren't even sure that much about where we were at in terms of the geography of the whole state and what's around us. But we went hiking there, and we went up in a tower that's a, I don't know, 40-some foot tower that's a lot like the tower in, what's the one by us? The Parnell Tower, same like that, but this is in the Pike Lake unit. We got up in the top of the tower, and we go looking around, and all of a sudden we look south, and here's what we see. What is it? Holy Hill. We didn't know we were that close to Holy Hill, but it's about 5 miles off. And I can't believe how much that sticks out, even from 5 miles off. It was amazing how much you could see that. We didn't know that we were even close to the thing. So here's the deal. What's going on? Why is that so prominent and so put out there? It's because they're seeking to do something that God is asking you and me to do, and that is to display His glory. This whole new species, do you know what it's about? It's displaying the glory of God. It's not about my being fixed. It's not about my getting rid of whatever my besetting sin is. It's not about us just getting along. It's about Christ and His glory. It's about a city being set on a hill by this new species that says, God is alive and He's moving. And He's moving in my life. So there's this living in unity that really is from God. Notice what verse 22 says. And in Him now, so this whole new species, and in Him you are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by His Spirit. Paul's going to pick this up again in the next chapter in Ephesians 3:10. He says it again. He says, this, the manifold wisdom of God, will be made known through the church, this new species, to the rulers and authority in the heavenly places. Somehow, we even declare this to the heavens, not just to the earth, but to the heavens. This new species about setting a city up on a hill to declare the glory of God. It's not about me feeling good. It's not about my relationships being fixed. It now is about Christ in Him alone that the city is set on the hill and His glory is being declared. Today, if there's any spot where a lack of unity exists, die. Choose the cross. Die. And say, no, not me anymore, Lord. You are to be glorified. I am to live for the honor of the blood of Christ that has given us a secure means to right relationships if I will but die. The cross is not, it not only gives unity vertically with God, but horizontally with others if we will take it up. And that's not the struggle. Nobody came down from a Roman cross alive. Only use of the cross is death. Death to ourself, that Christ might live in us. Die. Let's pray.